The Athletic.
Isn't it weird not talking about really horrible negative stuff every week?
It's going to be a challenge.
Can't get my head around it.
Yeah, I'm not used to it.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne. Coming up on this week's show, controversy disallowed goals, last-minute equalisers, my heart trying to escape its own chest cavity, and all of the other emotions involved in that 1-1 draw v Liverpool. The Athletic's Amy Lawrence will be joining us to talk about Joe Willock and for a look ahead to this weekend's clash with Arsenal. We'll dive headfirst into the archives and look back to 2017 and the day that Newcastle United confirmed promotion back to the Premier League with a 4-1 win against Preston North End. And Lord George of Colchonshire shall be asking the questions as I face off against Chris in the next instalment of the great Newcastle United pub quiz. But before we get our teeth into any of that, let's say hello to gorgeous George Colkin and Private Christopher Waffles. How are we doing, chaps? Are we well?
I'm ecstatic because I'm not doing the quiz, so I can't lose this week. I'm also ecstatic because we've got Amy on, and I love Amy. I've known Amy for years and years and years, and she's not only is she shit hot at a job, she's also a smashing person, so I'm excited to be talking to her later.
Lovely stuff. Chris, how are you doing, man? Are you well?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes, I'm not too bad at all.
Excellent stuff.
How about yourself?
I'm not too bad, you know. I'm pretty good. The pubs are open again. I've had a haircut. Everything seems to be falling into place nicely. Newcastle have picked up some points. And I've had a lovely pan of chocolat for my breakfast.
With extra chocolate, you did say before. I mean, don't miss that out.
I cut open the pan of chocolat and I put extra chocolate spread into it because I am a big fat fatty fat.
You cut open a pan of chocolate and put more chocolate inside.
Yes. What's wrong with that?
No, I quite like it. It's like opening a sausage roll and putting in an extra sausage. I don't know. Yeah. It's just...
It's like the heart attack version of a pan of chocolate. Though.
It is. I quite like the idea of becoming a French baker when I was a kid, but there's only so much pain that I can take.
Oh. Terrible.
Let's move on from that tumbleweed. Before we get stuck into that frankly bizarre game of football against Liverpool at the weekend, I've got just enough time to tell you about The Athletic's latest offer. You can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Chris, anything interesting on the horizon from you on theathletic.com?
Well, over the course of the last few days, I did a big piece with Mark Carey, one of our data writers, basically looking at Steve Bruce's My Way and what it's been like. It was 15 games at that point, it was slightly before the weekend, into what has changed, if anything, in terms of the way Newcastle are going to play and what Steve Bruce's way is. And then I did a piece after the bizarre game at the weekend, sort of like trying to almost explain how, frankly, ludicrous a lot of that match was, and starting on the fact that Jonjo Shelvey moved to centre-back and then basically taking it from there to explain a bizarre game, but a one Newcastle United took a point from and so was wonderful in the end.
Wonderful stuff. George, how about you?
Yeah, I did a piece last week on the mess of the Super League and my response to that as someone who has watched Newcastle for all of their lives. Chris and I are working on something about what has changed for Newcastle since Brighton, and thank God it has. And yeah, I'm also going to go to Hartlepool this weekend and write something on them. They're doing very well in the whatever division they're in.
Fantastic stuff. Well, there you go. Glad you've got the details on that one, George. So get yourself to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and take advantage of the special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Right then, chaps. That Liverpool game at the weekend, I've got four words for you, Christopher Waffles. Joe Willock, goal machine.
Well, where there's a Willock, there's a way. I did nick that from...
Oh, you dirty boy.
Where there's a Willock, there's a Wazzock, and he's about to speak.
Well, I did actually nick that from Max Roberts, a mutual friend of George and ours, so I will give him a recognition for that. But Yeah, last three appearances. First player since Adam Lafondre to score three successive substitute appearances on the pitch in the Premier League. But what an impact. Just pops up in the right place and scores goals. That's what Newcastle have lacked from midfield in recent years. That's what Steve Bruce has wanted. And Joe Willock is mainly. He certainly doesn't like the term super sub, as we saw.
He doesn't, does he?
His face when he got asked about that.
Yeah. Fantastic. We're going to talk to Amy Lawrence about Joe Wilk in a bit more detail later on, but he's got that sort of Kevin Nolan knack of arriving late in the box, hasn't he, and just being in the right place at the right time.
Yes, I'll be fascinated to hear what Amy says about how he's being viewed back at Arsenal at the minute, because obviously there's already a lot of chat about what Newcastle may or may not do in the summer, and Steve Bruce saying that he's the kind of player you would build a club around, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, he's just got that. He's got that sort of uncanny ability to be in the right place at the right time, and it's valuable for any player in this Newcastle team, which has struggled to score goals for so long in the past couple of seasons, but certainly for a midfielder. Because the team have been so reliant on Callum Wilson up to this point. So
to have somebody else
who can take the strain in that sense is a great relief. And yeah, I mean, the challenge is what does Steve Bruce do with him? Because you can't, if you want to build a team around a fella, you can't have him on the bench every week. But at the same time, the team's doing pretty well at the minute. So that will be a fascinating one to watch in the coming weeks.
Certainly. Well, Chris, not to put too fine a point on it, it was an absolutely ridiculous game of football, wasn't it, on Saturday?
The first half was sort of inexplicable in terms of the way that the game just opened up. I've never seen a game with so little structure. I've been to some bizarre matches, but there was just no... Now, that all the players seemed to be in the middle of the pitch, and yet there seemed to be so much space for everyone to attack into. Just none of it made any sort of sense. And really, I mean, Liverpool should have had five goals easy in the first half. Newcastle should have had two or three. And both teams, when they attacked, looked like they were going to score. And somehow at half-time, it was only 1-0. I mean, obviously, that wonderful ball from Shelvey to release Sean Longstaff, who I know a lot of people criticize and said he should have scored. I think he's managed to get in that position and his feet have got a bit tangled. He's got it on target. I think it's a little bit harsh to say he has to score. He's got the shot on target. He probably should score, but he's got the shot on target. And I think there was a little bit too much criticism maybe of that specific moment. But then there was that, I mean, the moment that sort of summed up Newcastle's first half in some ways was when Joe Linton and Almiron ran into each other, and that was just like, oh my god.
It was like watching American wrestling that they used to show on ITV when I was a kid. It was like, you know, bounce off the ropes and fly into each other. It was absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, Newcastle have looked a little bit more organised at the back. I know you're saying it was a bit all over the place, but since Federico Fernandez's return, I think that back line and Paul Dummett in there as well, I think they've looked a little bit more organised, George, haven't they?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, they relied on Dubravka to make some good saves.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're capable of making those last-ditch challenges and tackles and things like that. I mean, they came under a lot of pressure from Liverpool. And I think on a different day, they would have conceded more goals. But the one thing, well, you know, there are a couple of things to say here. Firstly, again, we've said this over the past couple of weeks now, but to have done what they've done after Brighton is of great credit to the players and to the management and coaches, because it just looked terminal at that point. And, you know, they've responded really well. And in all of those games, they've faced adversity in one sort or another. They've either had to come from, you know, they've come from behind, or they've had to react to kind of get a result. And they've kept going right till the end. I mean, they've kept going right to the end of the games, and they did that against Liverpool too. And, you know, I just think that Brighton felt like such a hammer blow, and it just looked to me that sort of hope was lost, but they found a way of responding, and they found a way that sort of allowed that spirit of theirs to sort of come back again, which is, it's not necessarily easy to explain, but thank God they've done it. And it was just a good silly, stupid game of football that was just enjoyable for its own sake. And from our perspective, it had the right result at the end of it.
It was classic Barclays, wasn't it? And that sort of that little response that Newcastle have had has came in conjunction with Alan Saint-Maximin and Callum Wilson returning, Chris. And Wilson caused problems, didn't he? And Liverpool didn't seem to know how to handle Saint-Maximin as well.
Saint-Maximin really has impressed me the last few weeks, because at points previously, I think it was fair to say that as brilliant as he could look, he also had a propensity to disappear up his own backside. Whereas in recent weeks, certainly that first half, I mean, for example, the ball that he played through for when Almiron and Joe Linton ran into one another, he beat three or four men who backtracked, yeah. He drags them out of position, and then he finds that final ball. And that's the impact that he has brought. And Steve Bruce, to be fair on him, has always said, you put Callum Wilson in this team, you put Alan Saint-Maximin in this team, and we're completely different. And that has proven to be the case. And Steve Bruce has managed his return well. He didn't start him initially, brought him on. Obviously, in the Burnley game, made the impact. In the last two games, he's had a key role in deciding those. Callum Wilson, I personally thought, should have started at the weekend. But again, the impact he had coming on the bench, Newcastle was still only 1-0 down. He bizarrely had the goal disallowed, for which I was actually more annoyed about the lack of penalty being awarded than the actual
the VAR push decision. By Alexander Armstrong, yeah.
Technically, the VAR decision was right. We can debate the ins and outs of VAR, as loads of people have, but technically that was correct. But then if you are going to pull it back for that, then you look at the fact that Alexander Arnold pushed him, and that's the reason why the handball eventually comes up and that he doesn't get the shot away. But
if he goes down, he probably gets the penalty, doesn't he?
Probably, yeah. But again, that's just stupid, in my opinion, officiating. That's not the way that it should be. It's like then you're encouraging him to go down, and then we're going to have this debate about whether people go down too early. But that was why the Willock mum was just, I mean, so sweet, given everything with the Super League last week, given everything that had gone on. It was hilarious, that last minute.
It certainly was. And the reaction of the Liverpool players and Klopp when that goal went in. What I must say is that hasn't been pointed out actually from that last goal was the header by Dwight Gayle from the ball in by Dummett was absolutely brilliant. The fact he got that ball down to Joe Willock's feet was a wonderful bit of play.
Yeah, did very, very well. And it's one of those games, I mean, you know, obviously with the Super League thing and then with that ending, you would have just loved supporters of both teams to have been in the ground, because you know, I'm sure that it would have been, been lively anyway. What with their role and
absolutely
FSG's role in the Super League thing, and then that last minute, or that late equaliser, it just would have been fantastic.
It would, and that's 8 points from the last four games. Chris, for Newcastle, are they all but safe now?
They are, yeah. And I just want to echo what George said. I did not see this coming. I did not see where Newcastle would be capable of getting this many points from the last few games. And have they rode their luck at times? Yes, undoubtedly. I think they rode their luck. I think I was maybe in the minority on Saturday at the end of the game. I mean, obviously, Alan Shearer tweeted saying deserved at least a point. I'm not actually sure that is true. I think that on the balance of play, Liverpool deserved to win. But Newcastle showed that resilience. They stuck at it again and they managed to get that point. And it's something that they weren't showing previously, and things have changed, and there's been a turnaround for whatever reason, and everyone, head coach, players, everyone deserves a bit of credit for that. And as much as I think a lot of people wanted, and well, the vast majority of people wanted Newcastle to make the call on Bruce during the international break, they stuck to their guns, and you can say that at least in some ways they've been rewarded. What they want this season is Newcastle United to survive. I think they're safe already. I thought they were safe before the weekend. I think the way that the game went at the weekend, and then also West Brom's sort of last minute conceding, which was again terrible to see Big Sam in such a way like that. But that's by the by. But yeah, I think they are safe, and now it's. I think they should go in the Arsenal game with no fear whatsoever. I really think this is a game that, given the fact that Arsenal have Europa League to focus on, that Newcastle can go into it with a lot of confidence, because I don't think they're great, and Newcastle have shown that they can cause teams problems. And if they start Saint-Maximin and Wilson, I don't think any defence is going to fancy that.
Definitely not. Well, then, just before we move on, also, just want to say Fabian Schär came through 45 minutes for the reserves as well, which is great news and good to see that. I was thinking he was probably not going to make another appearance for Newcastle this season, but it's fantastic to see him back on his feet.
Can I just say that personally, I'm very pleased about that, because given the lack of Newcastle players that are likely to be at the Euros, I was worried I was going to have to write about Emil Kraft being on the Sweden bench every single week during the Euros. So that might give me something else to focus on.
From a purely selfish point of view, Chris.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Outstanding stuff. Well, we'll be back in just a little bit with Amy Lawrence to talk about all things Arsenal. Speak to you soon. So we are joined by The Athletic's Amy Lawrence. Amy's here to talk about all things Arsenal. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Sun is shining down here. We're not in any Super League. you know, we're just trying to get used to things that will be familiar for you of how the hell do you deal with having an owner that drives everybody bonkers but doesn't seem to want to go anywhere. You know, you'll be familiar with all this stuff.
We're well-versed in all of that stuff. Well, thank you very much for coming on anyway. It's fantastic to have you. Just to start with, Joel Willock, what an impression that young man's made, hasn't he?
Do you like him?
I do a lot. Yeah, he's a great little player.
I mean, I'm really pleased for him that he's had a loan that has been so effective and enlightening, and probably has done a lot for his confidence. I'm fascinated to see where it goes from here, because I think there's always that thing with a young player who comes through from the academy and is part of the, you know, what you dream of, which is producing your own players to play for your own club and have that affection and affiliation that comes from, you know, all the years of development. But there is often that point where it's like, will they, won't they, when they reach that sort of limbo almost, where you can sometimes, you have that window of opportunity, and where's it going to go? And obviously Arsenal have had a little cluster come through with Saka, Smith Rowe, and Joe Willock, and Maitland-Niles, and Nketiah. And, you know, it's unrealistic that all of them become a first-team regulars forever and ever. It looks like Saka and Smith Rowe have really nailed that opportunity. And the others are, you know, are having a slightly different path with more loans outside the club rather than developing within. And some, I guess, will possibly come back. And some won't, or maybe none of them will come back, but we don't know. But of course, you send someone on loan and you always think, are they going to go off on loan and come back a better player or a more wanted player or a more developed player? Or are they going on loan with a view to how can you cash in? And I think that Joe's such an interesting player because while he might not be the most perfectly formed player, he has got something that very others have, which is this knack for scoring goals. And it's not new. It's been with him throughout his youth career. In fact, the season before he really made his breakthrough into the first team at Arsenal, he got a ton of goals from midfield, like, you know, well into the high teens, I think, and was involved in a lot of assists. And his goal involvements were sort of striker numbers rather than midfield numbers. But the thing you always have with him is he good enough in all the other aspects of midfield play to be someone that you're relying on, you're starting every week and you trust to have in an important midfield position? And I'm fascinated that it seems you're watching him every week at the moment that he obviously doesn't like this super sub role, yet he's coming on and doing the business.
Is he? I'm just wondering, it's interesting, Amy. There can often be different reasons for going out on loan. You might send a really young kid out on loan to sort of toughen them up. That would sort of be the cliche. Or you might send out players who, you know, are kind of nowhere near the first team and, you know, it's like putting them in the shop window. It feels like Joe Willock is somewhere sort of in between those things, that he's already, you know, he is still young, but he's made quite a lot of first team appearances for Arsenal. Would that be a fair reflection of where he stands at the club, that maybe people aren't quite sure, you know, what his status would be? Is he someone to filter back into the first team, or is he somebody that they would let go?
I think that's a brilliant point. And I think that whole debate has to be contextualised with the fact that Arsenal need money. So in the same way that, say, maybe Emi Martinez came into the team and did a phenomenal job in goal at the tail end of last season, and there was a big debate about whether it should be Martinez or Leno. And it's, in a way, that debate goes on because, you know, Leno's making a lot of mistakes and a lot of people think that Martinez is having a better season, let's just say. But the only one they had a bid for was Martinez.
Yeah,
they needed cash. If they wanted to go and try and buy Thomas Partey, which they did, they didn't have any money and nobody, they weren't getting bids on anyone. And they got a £20 million bid for a goalkeeper. And I think that instructs sometimes your, you know, what should we do here? And in the same way that with Joe, this is a big summer for Arsenal. And if bids come in for him and they don't come in for other people, let's just say, I would think that that can push Arsenal to leaning one way or another. I'd like to think they make a purely sporting decision and look at Joe and what he can bring in terms of scoring goals from midfield. It's been noted by just about everybody that Arsenal have scored almost no goals from midfield all season without Joe. So he fulfills a role that no one else is capable of at the moment in the current team. In fact, Thomas Partey's shooting is already the stuff of a great deal of sort of memes and cynicism and like look away now or hide or whatever. But I would be with my practical head on rather than my emotional head on looking at Arsenal thinking, I think I know what they do if they got a big bid because I think they need money to strengthen in other areas. However, it may well be if they don't get tempted or if money is possible elsewhere that Joe will be coming back and pushing for that place.
Amy, I mean, how would Arteta use Willock? Because at Newcastle, he's come in and he's played a few different roles so far. And I mean, Steve Bruce has mentioned he's played number 10 before, but we've seen him sort of in midfield three. We've seen him even as a false nine at times. And what was it that, how did Arteta use him? And what was it that he really wanted to see more from him from this loan?
But that's a really, really good question because I think that was possibly the thing that was a little bit tricky for Joe in that he has come in and played all over the place. He's played on the wing. He's cropped up deeper in midfield, further forward in midfield, in different midfield combinations, false nine, you name it. And if you compare that to, well, I suppose if you compare that to Bukayo Saka, he's played in a lot of positions and it doesn't seem to have held him back at all. But someone like Smith Rowe has come in and more or less been playing as a 10 or sometimes shifted out to accommodate Odegaard. And I think for a player like Joe, it would help him to have a more settled position. But he hasn't been able to nail that yet. And I don't know whether that was if it was me, what would I have wanted Joe to achieve from his loan at Newcastle? Show me that you can do all your discipline to do all the things required of a central midfield player is there rather than just being tremendous with your impact and capability of scoring goals, which is his timing of his runs is the way he appears, his ability to finish, it's class. It's, I think, as such a fantastic weapon for any football club to have.
He's in a bit of a difficult position at the minute, though, isn't he, with Steve Bruce playing him as a sub rather than a starter, seems to be quite set on having Shelvey and Longstaff in the middle. And if Joe wants to prove to Arteta that he's capable of holding down that central midfield role, starting games would really be the minimum he'd need, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you tell me, has he got no chance of that at the moment? Is that set in stone?
I mean, I would be playing him from the start personally, but you never know with Newcastle.
I mean, it's difficult because Newcastle have a sort of lot of... Newcastle's problem at the minute is that they don't really... They haven't had settled systems for a while, but every time they change system, it's sort of... They've got a bit of an unbalanced squad and it's difficult to know who fits in where. And in the current system, Willock maybe doesn't fit in as comfortably, at least seemingly from what maybe Bruce wants from the players from the start. And so he's bringing him on as an impactful player. I do think he could perform in that role. But I suppose Steve Bruce would turn around and go, well, Joe Willock's come on the last three games and got us 5 points. So it's worked in what we've done. So he's in a bit of a difficult position there, yeah.
Would you want to sign him from what you've seen of him, if you could?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the point I was going to make was that Steve Bruce has also said he's the kind of player you would build your club around. And the sort of, you know, the response to that is, but you're not even starting him, Steve. Yeah. So that's the sort of, that's the kind of very Newcastle-y sort of conundrum that there is at the moment. I would want to start him because he's dynamic. Not only does he sort of add the goal threat, but he wants to drive forward. I can understand in the short term that things aren't changing because, you know, since their draw with Tottenham, they're unbeaten. and are kind of looking moderately good. And as Chris says, he's coming on and scoring goals. So it's sort of not as if it's a sort of long-term problem. But it's the same old story with Newcastle. It's the short blanket that you kind of solve one problem somewhere and you kind of immediately create one somewhere else. But yeah. I love the impact he's had so far, and he's brought sort of enthusiasm and dynamism to the midfield.
That's what we've lacked a little bit. We've lacked a bit of that energy, haven't we, in that midfield? And he's definitely brought that since he's came in. I would love to see him sign permanently. I think he's the sort of player we've needed for a while, Amy.
We'll have to all watch this space, because I'm none the wiser than you lot. But we're all trying to second guess what the plans might be for Arsenal. Have got a lot of people on loan and a fair amount of work they'd like to do. And it's really hard to predict the future for just about half the squad at the moment. I don't know if that resonates with you lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and obviously he can't play this weekend, but we will ask you a little bit about the match this weekend as well. I mean, we're very used to talking about Newcastle in terms of crisis and in terms of all those sorts of things. It's quite nice to talk to somebody else who might be going through something a bit similar. I mean, it feels like it's been another extraordinary week for Arsenal, both sort of off the pitch in terms of European Super League and now with takeover stuff as well. What is the mood around this club at the moment?
Pretty bonkers, to be honest. I mean, it is one of those where you literally I wake up in the morning or you've gone and done something and then you turn on social media and it's like being hit on the head by a complete other load of madness that you hadn't imagined.
This sounds so familiar.
It does, yeah.
I think the thing that is... I mean, obviously, the Super League scenario was a big shock to everyone's system, and it was very pleasing to see how the backtrack came about so quickly, and it was pleasing to see the fans mobilising. And even, not just the fans, but, I mean, you know, you're looking around for people involved, players, managers, whatever, at the clubs, to see who was brave enough to come out and make a comment. And... Arsenal were a bit quiet for a while, and then Hector Bellerin, who was the predictable voice of reason in all of this on behalf of Arsenal, made a comment. And then, rather brilliantly, Ian Wright went full in two-footed, as if he was aiming for Peter Schmeichel back in the day with a Kroenke out tweet. And that was like, wow, because he's someone who is employed by the club in an ambassadorial role, so he's got those connections, and to do something like that took a lot of bravery, I think. But we're in this situation, and it's not new because he's been around for a while, but it feels new to an extent where the owner is very unloved in general. The feeling of a kind of lack of aspirations or a way to kind of put the club back on a more positive sort of step is very much in the air. And yet it's a bit different to with Mike Ashley, because obviously Mike Ashley appears to be wanting to sell Newcastle but struggling to get that over the line, whereas Stan Kroenke's and all the noises that come out of them is no intention of selling. So you feel very stuck, you feel a bit powerless, and that's a worry because it feels like stasis. It feels like, how do you change this?
Yeah, it's slightly different positions in terms of the league and Europe and stuff, but I mean, very similar in terms of that feeling of powerlessness and that loss of aspiration from the club, the loss of ambition. How would you sort of mark Arteta in the job so far? I mean, I know that's one of those sort of eternal questions with Arsenal. The reason it's sort of interesting to me, beyond just being interested in Arsenal, is that he is someone that Newcastle sort of looked at in the summer when Rafa left, and also someone that the prospective buyers were looking at very closely in terms of someone that they would have been interested in. That just goes to show how long the takeover or non-takeover process has been going on at Newcastle. But what do you make of Arteta so far?
Good question. And I'd have to answer that almost twice over. So I think, what did I make of him last season? I think he did a phenomenal job when he first came in, and the impact that he was able to make in picking up an absolute mess. The squad was really shambolic. The morale was very flaky and there were a lot of problems around, and the way he tackled them both verbally, and I think he's good at expressing himself, and the famous line that keeps coming back is non-negotiables. He said that on day one, you know, I've got non-negotiables, and you either agree with them and live up to them, or cheerio. And he's been true to his word with that, you know, in obviously taking on a player as powerful as Mesut Ozil and others that he's fallen out with, or he's, you know, distanced the amount that he's used them until he's maybe let them back in. He's shown a bit of a disciplinarian, very strong, stubborn streak. They weren't great to watch last season, but it wasn't surprising given that the squad was a bit of a shambles. But he managed to get them to win the FA Cup and beat some good teams in the process. Yeah. And to be on it and get back into Europe when they were looking at being out of Europe for the first time in nearly 25 years. And I thought that was a remarkable achievement, all in all. An imperfect one. Plus it's COVID and, you know, the football stopped and then behind closed doors. I mean, it was a very mad opening few months to his anybody's managerial career. And I thought he handled it all pretty well. This season is not the same. This season, I think, has shown some of those kind of like very high, you know, standards that he demands, very high demands and a very set way of doing things. He's been struggling to achieve them. So, you know, the team is not doing, you know, be absolutely totally ninth and tenth virtually all season. They've lost almost a record number of games. They don't do well at home at the moment. It's been a kind of up and down season, but a lot of down that you think, this is really not where Arsenal think they ought to be. And I think he's had things that he's not handled perhaps quite as well, or has not been effective compared to the year before. So he's lost a bit of the ground that he made. It's like he sprinted off into the job and, and he's feeling it a bit now. So they have a Europa League semi-final against Villarreal, and that's pretty massive, really, because if they don't do well in that, I think there'll be a lot of noise suggesting where's the progress. There's a lot of talk of what's called trust the process. That's one of the catchphrases. And, it, you know, the more people that start to use it ironically, it's not really a good sign. So I think
your catchphrase is trust the process. Ours is where's the bacon? That sums up. And the other thing is, right,
that's
the other
thing is, listening, better catchphrase. I'm quite jealous. Can we swap?
Listening to you there, it's like Arsenal can be a shambles and yet win the FA Cup. Mm. Why can't Newcastle be a shambles and win the FA Cup?
Well, quite.
Hey, answer no me that. Idea. Well, you can't answer me that. So, I mean, I reckon sort of this has fallen quite well for, well, potentially this has fallen quite well for Newcastle this weekend, because it's not Arsenal's most important game. I mean, in fact, you know, they have those two games against Villarreal, and they're obviously massively important. So do you think, give us a prediction for the weekend. I know that's horrible, but
I'm predicting that I don't expect Arsenal to have a particularly cohesive or motivated performance.
Well, that makes two.
Oh, come on, be a bit more vague, Amy, please. Come on. Fantastic. Well, I think we'll wrap things up there, Amy. Thank you so much for your time. It's been great to talk to you, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Pleasure, mate. Anytime. Take care, guys.
Right then, ladies and gentlemen, join us as we take a little stroll down memory lane, not too far down memory lane, in fact, back to 2017, when Newcastle United clinched promotion against Preston North End at St James's Park. Have a little listen to this.
Let's play! Taken down by Mitrovic, shot is on! Oh! Sells going near and gets there, it's in! The touch from Iose Perez. Oh, and this could be interesting. It's Daniel Johnson racing through. And Rob Elliott to deny him. A shout, but a break on here for Preston. Barkhazy. There we go, Johnson. Brown arriving. Into Hugill. He's done it. Preston have gatecrashed the party. And it's big Jordan Hugill, who's had a fabulous season for Preston. It's Isaac Hayden on the surge here for Newcastle. Oh, and Atsu here has the chance and takes it. Chu's delivery. That was Spur that time. Perez! Who's there in the follow-up? Oh, handball, surely! Ritchie! Red card. Has to be for Gallagher. There is no option. That's surely the one! Matt Ritchie staying cool when it matters. Sells again near post. Oh, and Hugo! And it's in! Another fortunate goal for Ayoze Perez! And they're in party mood now! Never mind the jitters, the job is done. In the minimum time, Newcastle bounce straight back to the Premier League.
Oh, there we go, chaps. Great game, that, wasn't it? Party atmosphere inside of St James. A fantastic night. And Rafa Benitez tucking his glasses into his top pocket in emphatic style as Newcastle clinch promotion back to the Premier League, Chris. Fantastic game.
It was a fantastic game. And it was a bit of relief because even though by that stage Newcastle got them in such a strong position, not long before that, there was a bit of a wobble. If you remember,
yes,
the games against, particularly over Easter weekend, I remember Easter weekend being particularly difficult for Newcastle. Friday night, winning 1-0 against Leeds, and then Chris Wood scored a late equaliser. Then they went to Ipswich on the Monday, and they were torn to shreds. And I remember going back to the hotel that I was staying at in Ipswich and thinking this could still go wrong. But then that evening, Huddersfield, I think, failed to win. And so by that stage, it was back in Newcastle's hands again. And they went in that Preston match. And you just felt all day, this is actually going to happen. This is going to be the way it is. And Newcastle went about their job so well. And just a brilliant performance and a wonderful, wonderful way to have wrapped it up early as well. Make sure it wasn't going down to like the final game of the season. And that they were going back to the Premier League. So just wonderful, wonderful night.
George, of course, that Barnsley game on the last day was the game that Newcastle clinched the title, just snatching it from Brighton at the last minute. But this was a great night as well. And Newcastle had a fantastic game, 68% possession, 22 shots, 16 corners. They tore Preston North End a new one, didn't they?
They had the capability of doing that, to sort of roll through teams, push through teams. But yeah, I mean, relief, as Chris says, was the first thing after that little wobble. And a bit like the previous Championship season, it sort of gets, I think, partially in one's own memory, but also sort of history gets rewritten a little bit. It's like, oh, you know, Newcastle were always going to come up first time, and you know, they had the strongest squad, they had the strongest team, they had the best manager, and it was always going to happen. But that doesn't mean that at the time it wasn't tough and it wasn't hard going at places. And you know, they didn't just turn up and do it. They had to kind of graft week in and week out. But I mean, I do remember that sort of big exhalation that night, because they had gone through that little rocky spell, and it's going to be okay now. It's going to be all right. And you know, it's a good reminder about the players that are still at the club, that were the core of that team that night, you know, and still are, really.
Yeah, Jamal Lascelles, Paul Dummett, Kieran Clark, Isaac Hayden, Matt Ritchie, Jonjo Shelvey all started the game. And, you know, those players are still with us. Chris, 4 years on from that, at the time there was a lot of positivity around the club. There was a lot of possibilities with Rafa there. He'd stayed on, and then obviously we know what happened from then on. Looking back 4 years in the future, how do you feel Newcastle have progressed? And I don't think we've lived up to that potential, have we?
Well, Christian Atsu scored. Do you remember him?
Yes.
He got an assist for the under-23.
Still yesterday. There.
Still there. Beaten.
Took his goal well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did take his goal very well that day. I mean, that's the frustration, the internal frustration with Mike Ashley's Newcastle, is that they have those moments that season seemed, or those 18 months for the start of Benitez's time seemed to be a sort of positive aberration of the Mike Ashley era. Maybe things could work under Mike Ashley. Maybe there was a way to try and progress the club, but instead they've reverted to type. And this is the end of nearly the fourth season back in the Premier League, and they haven't made any progress whatsoever. Really, they're they're actually going to probably finish lower than they've finished at all since they've been back in the Premier League. This season has been torturous. Thankfully, they've managed to drag themselves back out of a terrible position they were in, and they are just about safe now. But it's, you just worry about next season. What does next season hold? Is there going to be any progress whatsoever? Is it just going to be Steve Bruce's remit is to finish 17th and above if Mike Ashley remains owner? And that is the concern, because he even more so than in the past, he has checked out. And so it is frustrating to think back to that moment and think that this seemed to be the start of a positive journey, but eventually there was just that glass ceiling that Mike Ashley's Newcastle has.
You know, there's a couple of things to remark upon. I think, I mean, it's just that great reminder that when your team is winning matches, more often than not, it's just a great feeling. You know, it's a great feeling being in the stadium. It's a great feeling being around the club and in the city. It just makes it makes such a big difference to your weekend, and it makes such a big difference to the whole place, really. And it sort of doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what division you're in if you're doing that. No, as Chris says, I mean, yeah, it felt like, I mean, I suppose in retrospect, it feels like we all sort of averted our gaze from the obvious, maybe for 2 or 3 years. But there was that sense that Newcastle will come back into the Premier League recalibrated, with momentum behind them, with some positivity behind them, and it was kind of chance to start again. But we've pretty quickly found ourselves in a very familiar situation. I think it's, you know, I said earlier talking about Liverpool, I mean, it is really, really great that the team have responded in the way they have since Brighton. And it's been actually quite fun watching games, or bits of games certainly, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think if you allow yourself to sort of look wider than that or bigger than that, it's kind of just feels like it's giving the club just the chance, you know, all of us to go through the same stuff that we've been going through over the last couple of years. And that's difficult to sort of really think about and difficult to take. So that's why it's maybe more fun to sort of focus on the smaller picture at the minute. But yeah, it was one of those occasions where you just get, you know, reminded of the club's potential and power.
Absolutely. And Chris, just before we move on, we have to say a special mensch for Preston North End striker Paul Gallagher for a fantastic save on the goal line. Point blank range, low to his left, tipping the ball around the post, earning himself a red card, and Matt Ritchie dispatching the resultant penalty as well. It's not often you see that one, is it?
It was a great save. I was slightly disappointed, though, that he didn't try the Stephen Taylor sort of "I've been shot." It was, he just accepted his fate.
The sniper.
And yeah, so it was. That was the slight disappointment, but the save itself was very good.
Yeah. It's almost like a reaction thing, that, isn't it, when you see players doing that? They put their hand out and they go, "Oh, shit, what have I done?" Great stuff. Anyway, let us move on. It is the great Newcastle United pub quiz. And this week, your quiz master is Sir George Culkin. George, what you got for us?
I've got a really badly thought out quiz, if that's all right with you.
I mean, is that any different every other week?
Did it the last minute. No. We are going to be in a pub. I think I'm just going to go local tonight, if that's all right. I mean, it's a bit of a journey for you, Taylor. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But we're just going to go to the Gosforth Hotel, which is my local.
Fantastic.
Always have great beer there, so I'm looking forward to that. And I think, yeah, good. That'll be a nice place to host this quiz. Easy for me to get there. Not too far to stagger back. Couldn't really give a toss about you.
Handy for the metro for me. Metro's just up the road.
Yeah, it's not too far from the metro. Yeah, it's not too far from the metro.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I shall await your real-life invitation to that pub any day now.
Absolutely. any year now. Hopefully before lockdown number 7. Yeah,
definitely. We'll,
so, in honour of Joe Willock, we are doing a loan spell special quiz.
Ooh.
So, I'm looking at some of Newcastle's great and not-so-great loan signings of the past recent years. Does that make sense? And what I'm going to do is I've got 4 loan players who've been at Newcastle, and there are 2 questions per each signing. I'm just trying to work out how best to do this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to toss a coin to see who goes first. And that's going to be luck of the draw. You'll get two questions on each player. Does that make sense?
Go for it.
All right, Chris, head or tails?
Heels.
It's a Euro and it doesn't actually have a head on it.
Are you all right?
This has been a very well thought out start to this quiz, George. So.
Yeah, I would quite like to re-record some of this because it was been so fucking shambolic. But,
no, it's great. Keep going. I love it.
Right, Chris, I'll have to redo that again. Two Euro coin or side or other side?
Other side.
It's the two Euro side. I'm sorry, you're wrong. Right, so that means, Taylor, you're going first. And your Newcastle loan sign is Loic Remy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, who joined Newcastle on loan from Queen's Park Rangers in 2016.
Yes.
He then, after a successful loan, he then joined Chelsea for £10.5 million. Your first question on Loic Remy is, which English club did he subsequently join on loan?
After Chelsea.
Correct.
He went to Crystal Palace, didn't he?
Are you asking me or
he went to Crystal
me?
Palace, but he didn't play many games. I know that.
You are not
a very far away dinger.
Sometimes it works better than this. Maybe it needs
George, whatever you do, don't open a hotel reception.
Right. Right. Your follow-up question is a real stinker.
Oh.
Which Turkish club does Loic Remy now play for?
Oh, God, I don't know, but it probably ends in Spor. That's all I know.
I'm going to give you half a point for that. Well, it's Rizespor.
No, half the league, if not more, ends with Spor. You can't give him half a point for that.
I'm sorry, Chris. These are my rules. It's my quiz. It's my rules. I'm not taking
like
any shit off anybody.
It's like saying in England,
oh,
they've got
that.
FC in the title or something.
Well, maybe on a subsequent question, I might feel kindly towards you and give you half a point. However,
I can imagine Chris's face
where you
right
are,
now.
I'm just more shambolic. I'm more likely to dock you points. Right, your Newcastle United loan player. I'm tempted now just to go straight to the heart. Is Islam Slimani, the Algeria international who joined Newcastle from Leicester in January 2018. Your first question is, how many league games did Islam Slimani start for Newcastle? It's not multiple choice, so it's quite difficult.
I think you only made about five or six appearances of that. Two.
Oops. It was one. So I'm afraid you're wrong. You were quite close. However, your second question about Slimani is actually is slightly easier. His next move on loan was to a Turkish club. So yet again, a Turkish club. Ooh, Chris, maybe you could say something similar to Taylor here. But which club
would
was it?
It'd be wrong if I said that, because I don't think it would be... So you wouldn't give us half a point. I think it was Fenerbahce, so...
Correct.
So but I've got half a point if I'd said it then probably ends with Spor.
No, you wouldn't, because it would have been wrong.
Get it. Excellent.
Right. It's 1 point to Chris. It's 1.5 very controversial points to say that. Round two of no question three. I don't know. Taylor,
yes.
Antonio Barreca.
Oh Jesus!
Yes, January the 31st, 2019. The Italy under 21 international joined Newcastle on loan from Monaco. He made one substitute appearance for the club.
He did. I remember it.
Name me either of the Italian clubs he next joined on loan.
Oh, God. Oh, I thought you were going to ask me for the team he played against. Oh, bollocks. Oh, God, Italian teams. I genuinely don't know who this is, so it would be a guess. I've got Sampdoria in my head, but...
gotta hurry you.
I know you do. I'm sorry. I don't know. Fiorentina.
Oh.
Yes, gets in.
Ridiculous. That is ridiculous, yes. And the other alternative was Genoa.
Oh, right. Genoa, right.
Now okay. Genoa with a North Fiorentina.
Yeah. The next question is, name the team against whom he made his only ball for Newcastle.
Why is that balls? Bloody obvious. It's famous that he's the only person of Dunmore.
It was Man City, wasn't it?
Oh, no, he's wrong. Yes, he's wrong.
Is it wrong?
Yes.
It was Wembley. He's the only player, I think, in the history to have only made their appearance at Wembley.
Frig.
Of course. Chris, you could win this, mate.
Good question.
Yeah, oh, now you're on side, are you? Bloody apple polisher.
Chris, I could have given you half a point as a bonus there. I'm tempted to do that.
Don't you just fucking dare, Colgan.
No, I'm going to do that. I'm going to level it. I'm giving you half a point just to level that up. So you get half a ding. Right, Chris, Seydou Doumbia.
Oh, God.
Joined Newcastle on loan from Roma on February the 1st, 2016. He made three appearances for the club, all from the bench. Okay? Which Swiss club did he then join on loan in 2016-17?
Basel.
Absolute bullshit.
Yes.
That is correct.
FC bullshit.
And you know what he did? He scored 20 goals in 25 appearances.
Of course he did, because it's an absolute joke league, that's why.
Won the Swiss League and then also won the Swiss Cup. So I now reckon the scores are level. But if Chris gets his second question right, he'll win the quiz. And I think you'll get this. Doumbia and eight teammates were sacked by FC Sion in March 2020. Why?
I don't know the answer to this. Failing to take drugs tests.
Oops. The tension in here now.
No, they refused to take a pay cut because of the coronavirus.
I do remember that now.
Oh, God. I've done a pie take question, but I haven't actually written the answer down. So this is a tie break. It's quite a simple one in some ways. Right, I'm going to go to you first, Taylor, because you went first during the quiz.
Okay.
I want you to tell me how many corners Newcastle had in the game against Liverpool last weekend.
Oh, George. Two.
Okay, Chris?
Three.
The answer is three. Christopher Wolf, you are this week's winner of the Big Pub Quiz.
Chris, you jummy shit.
Oh, wonderful quiz, George. I always said you're the best quiz master, so it's
that was shambolic. That was a bit shambolic all the way through there. I didn't set a very good tone with that. Shambolic.
George, you're the best. I love you, George. Pathetic.
Find out what the scores absolutely are at some point pathetic in the quiz. I know that I'm losing, but
yeah, we need to go back through and see who's won each week. I'm sure Ollie wouldn't mind putting an afternoon aside and looking through everything, would you, Ollie, producer Ollie? That seems like a good use of your time, Ollie.
Wow.
Oh, well, chaps, there we go. That's it. What a fantastic episode. Great to have Amy on. And George, I can't believe that quiz. That was an absolute... That was like jazz quizzing. That's what that was. It was all over the place.
Yes, it was. I hadn't really thought of the questions, the answers, the format, how to do it, the tie break.
One job, Colgan. Like, be better.
Well, it was a free-form bebop kind of, you know, with it had good sort of improvisation. It was very Miles Davis.
It was. Well done, Chris.
Thank you.
To have hosted the jazz club.
Sense that was through gritted teeth, but I shall accept regardless.
Yeah, I mean, they're ground down to stumps, to be honest, but there you go. Anyway, you lot, thanks very much for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe button. So you don't miss any episodes, and visit theathletic.com /Newcastle pod, in fact, for 40% off the price of a subscription. Until next time, take care. Thanks for listening to Pod on the Tyne. We'll speak to you soon.
The Athletic.